Hello and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello everyone and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 15, Number 1, and welcome to 2016. My goodness, seems like we're in some kind of space age. And you know what? We are. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was on indoor stationary rowing, known as ergometers. Indoor rowing machines simulate the rowing action of waterborne rowing for the purpose of exercise or as an adjunctive method of training for rowing on water. Of course, there is such a thing as rowing in the Olympics. It's a big sport, and these athletes are in phenomenal shape. Indoor rowing goes back as far as the 4th century BC when Greek soldiers trained on wooden rowing frames on shore to improve their rowing technique and timing for rowing on board ship. The rowing stroke, the actual method, is divided into 4 basic phases known as the catch, the drive, the finish, and the recovery. Rowing technique, as in all sport, is incredibly important. Form is relative to function and performance outcome. Incorrect form equals poor performance. It limits performance. It also limits the fun. It increases risk of injury. Have someone film you with a digital camera when you row, then study your stroke technique from beginning to end. Compare this to a teaching video online and look for ways to improve. Remember, practice makes permanent. Interval training is ideal for rowing in the gym. You can oxidize more fat as a fuel source compared to traditional non-interval cardio, especially over the next 24 hours after the rowing workout is complete. So you do 10, 20 minutes of rowing, and then for the next 24 hours, you're slowly metabolizing more fat compared to the traditional kind of continuous motion, which is less intense. You can also elevate your heart rate to a level not possible at a moderate continuous pace. As humans age, their resting pulse rate typically increases while their maximum heart rate decreases. As the two rates close in on each other, risk of morbidity and mortality increases. Keep the distance between them, your maximum heart rate and your lowest possible heart rate. Keep the distance between them as high as you can. Warm up for about 5 minutes at a moderate pace, then blast out a short interval or piece, it's called, for a minute or two. After a brief recovery period, perform several more interval pieces in this same manner. Rowing is great for all-round fitness and cardio. It provides excellent cross-training benefit and places very little strain on the lower back and joints. My topic on this edition of Clinical Review is PSN, Principles of Sport Nutrition, number 30, pH balance. This topic is critical to understand, yet the vast majority never think in these terms or even have a clue that food pH affects pH balance in the body. They don't even know what that means. You know, so this is an important oversight in the majority. All food consumed, regardless of source, has a massive impact on the alkalinity and acidity of our blood and interstitial fluids. Let's first acknowledge the fact that our blood is slightly alkaline, that we function best in an alkaline state, and that stress, training, sleep deprivation, prescription drugs, and junk food all cause the body to become more acidic. That means we're moving in the wrong direction. Living in a chronic state of acidosis means we are consuming acidic food and drink, and living a lifestyle that is continuously bombarding us with acid waste. Ultimately, these epigenetic conditions, these conditions that are associated with the outside environment, things that cause gene expression that we do think and say, eating is one of the environmental conditions. So this is really important to understand that these epigenetic conditions force tissues and cells inside the body to give up their limited alkaline reserve, and then slowly but surely we deplete them all. Eventually, the alkaline reserves become exhausted. Too much acid actually forces the body to scavenge bones, joints, and cartilage and connective tissue for the elements zinc, magnesium, calcium, sodium, and potassium, all of which are alkaline and needed to neutralize and buffer acidic waste. There's a number of different buffering systems inside the body, and one of them is to generate the ions from these alkaline minerals that are stored inside of us that we're made out of. You do not want to strip that down. You want to get them from your diet. So really, it's a balance, and that's why if you look at the pH scale displayed in Module 2 of the course, you can see that balance and health status in opposing elements is really what pH balance is all about. We all need to focus on an alkaline lifestyle. Tracy and I have an understanding about anyone with a health problem. To us, there are always two things to consider when they present: toxicity and deficiency, T and D. Toxicity and deficiency. They're either and or always both toxic and deficient. In this state, people are always dehydrated, meaning they are undersupplied with sufficient fluid and water, and they are always in a hyperacidic state, and this, in my experience to date, goes without exception. You can just automatically assume this. If you know anybody with cancer or heart disease or depression or a chronic infection or something is not right, they just don't feel good, for example, or they have some kind of weird, strange illness, there is always going to be an acid component. And if you look closely at their diet, you can see right away why they're struggling. They're consuming an acid-forming diet. Most people have an overall acid balance of 80%, which is way off the mark. It's like shooting a bow and arrow and missing the target by a century or by 1,000 meters. This means that 80% of what they consume as food liberates acid in the gut and blood. Ideally, our diet should be alkaline dominant. It should be not less than 60% alkaline and 40% acid. The initials pH, little p and big H, stands for potence hydrogen. So alkalinity and acidity is all about the concentration of hydrogen ions in a fluid or solution. If you have a solution with enough hydrogen to acidify it, like a solution in a beaker, you can measure the actual hydrogen ion concentration. Chemists have been doing this for centuries. The pH table relates to whether or not foods from nature have a tendency to provide more alkaline or acid ions. This has to do with elemental chemistry and electrolytes. Electrolytes are very important to understand for health and balance and human performance. The pH scale from left to right begins with 0, which is extremely acid, and then increases exponentially up to 14 on the opposite or right-hand side, which is extremely alkaline. Distilled water has a neutral pH, a pH of 7. It's right in the middle, which is generally pretty much always a good place to be. Human blood has a pH of about 7.35. So if 7 is neutral and the 3.5 gets you just over to the right, that means it's alkaline. And this has got to be maintained at a constant rate to sustain life in the body. If it's not sustained, we die. This brings us to the concept of homeostasis, a word that describes everything the body does to maintain balance and an internal environment conducive to life support. Essentially, all raw food from nature as it is, including plants and even game meat, are alkaline forming. And of course, there are exceptions. Many raw nuts, for example, are acidic, like walnuts or peanuts. But almonds are not. That's why they're called the king of the nuts. They're alkaline forming. There are charts you can refer to in the CSNA education program to get an idea of what foods are acid forming and what foods are alkaline. It's important to memorize, to look at these charts, to buy books that give you a really exhaustive view of all of the different food groups and which of the dairy, the meat, you know, the plants, the vegetables, the oils, which ones are alkaline and which ones are acid, so that you can put it together and create an alkaline dominant diet. If you take something like a piece of raw tuna sashimi and overcook it, it begins to acidify. Canned tuna, for example, is incredibly acidic. It generates an acid ash in the blood. But if you eat raw tuna sashimi, it will generate an alkaline ash, which is completely the opposite. It's the opposite effect. Whey protein isolate tends to be alkaline forming. This is one of its greatest advantages over other proteins. Other supplement protein powders like rice, soy, and pea are often denatured through solvent extraction and heat and high pressure, and this tends to acidify the ultimate end product. What this means is that once the product is consumed, broken down, and digested, Its overall impact in the blood, once absorbed, will leave an acid residue. The footprints that it leaves behind are acidic. A grapefruit seems to be acidic. It tastes acid because of the citric acid. Or a lemon or a lime, just bite into it. It seems acidic. But in actuality, when you eat it, with its enzymes and constituent micronutrients and its high amounts of alkaline minerals and fiber intact, it has an alkaline effect in the blood. Even freshly squeezed grapefruit juice applies here. Grapefruits are rich sources of potassium. But if you buy concentrated grapefruit juice off the grocery shelf, or orange juice or something similar, all juices for that matter, that they've been pulverized, pasteurized, homogenized, refined, fractionated, and sterilized, they're all acid forming. This is very important to understand, and why Tracy and I never consume any juice unless we make it ourselves from scratch, from the whole plants, and get a juicer and do it right. And man, that's a great way to help someone get more alkaline. So you can take something that in its natural free state is alkaline, then chemically alter it for convenience or to improve its shelf life for profit, but it will generate an acidic effect, leaving you with acid that you have to neutralize with alkaline resources, which may or may not be in your body. Now, if we have a friend, student, or client with too much acid, how can we help them? How can we get them to be more alkaline? What practical solutions can we offer? Well, the first thing we need to do is scrutinize and examine their diet in detail and see how much of what they're actually eating day in and day out is acid versus alkaline forming. Just be objective and see things as they are, not as they should be or could be or might be, but as they are. To improve their pH, we need to recommend alkaline foods. Obviously, the opposite of acid is alkaline. We're going to suggest more greens, freshly squeezed juices, colored fruits and vegetables, and of course, more filtered, non-chlorinated water, because the solution to pollution is dilution. We're going to get them off bread and grains, fried foods, overcooked dry animal proteins, junk food, and all fast food, and of course, tell them not to order in or drive through. All this stuff is extremely acidic. We're going to encourage them to walk in bare feet whenever they can. Like right now, as I speak, I'm wearing no shoes. Barefoot, man, is the way to go. And just wear shoes less often, because that actually acidifies your body. It doesn't let your feet breathe. Remember, we were told as kids, our hat goes on the head and shoes on the feet when it's cold, because that's where we lose. It comes out of us, a heat. And you got to release that energy, and it's as simple as that. Believe it or not, bare feet has a calming and alkalizing effect. That's why I love Hawaii, because you're walking on the beach barefoot, and man, outside in your front lawn, in the backyard, I love playing barefoot soccer. Anything in bare feet, man, try it. I'm going to play ping pong in bare feet tonight. We're going to recommend more rest, such as an afternoon nap or a brief period of meditation, and in the least to simply lie down on the floor. Just say, get on the floor right now, lay down, spread out, and relax, especially if they're an ectomorph and have a type A personality, and they will resist. They'll do anything not to do this because they're all wired up and they don't know how to relax, and that's their problem. Emotions like fear, anger, worry, and anxiety need to be managed. Constant running around needs to stop. The reason many are ill is because they are never still. Adrenaline and cortisol acidify the body, and they're released by constant motion. The reason many of us are acidic is because we don't take the time to relax and calm down. Our nerves get fried, and they short circuit. Overstimulation of the sympathetic component of the autonomic nervous system will acidify us. We need to become more parasympathetic dominant, like chill out, hang loose, take it easy. Another factor is training. Although extremely positive in many ways, running, swimming, cycling, weight training in the gym, or playing any sport, especially anaerobic training or sprint-related high-intensity sports, this generates hydrogen ions and ultimately more acid. It's a consequence of the activity. After a hard workout in the gym, we normally walk out with a lot of excess hydrogen and acid in the blood. This is all part of the pH game. And this is why, in part, we need to constantly hydrate and ideally head back home and have a nice alkaline shake and consume an alkaline diet throughout the day to balance and buffer the acid produced by living. Now, a good friend of mine, Dr. Joseph Campbell, who passed away some years ago, was an agricultural scientist. He taught me a lot about hair analysis and mineral chemistry. He said that the fertility of soil is relative to its alkalinity and acid state or balance, and that an acidic soil is infertile. He said, Corey, you just can't grow crops when you have too much acid. And I think the same is also true with the human body. The very essence of our life force, our chi, is compromised by the presence of too much acidic waste generated from consuming too many acid-forming elements. Again, phosphorus from bread, sulfur from denatured damaged proteins, and chlorine in salt and chlorinated water. Salt is chlorine and sodium combined. So the sodium is alkaline, but a lot of salt, especially the refined table salt that restaurants serve or that most people buy, also has sugar, which is acidic. How many people drink chlorinated tap water as a staple or bathe and shower in chlorinated water? And how many of us at the same time are getting optimum amounts of calcium, magnesium, and potassium? Very few people get enough of these alkaline elements, and that's really what ultimately determines our pH balance. It's all about hydrogen ion concentration, and once it becomes soluble, it spreads like wildfire throughout the body. Once you understand whether something is alkaline or acid, whether it's a food or drink, an emotion, or a certain behavior, you can add up the numbers in your mind. You can take a telescopic view of anyone's diet and lifestyle, and right off the bat, you can see that the overall impact of everything they do and don't do is either acid or alkaline, and one will dominate the other. And if it's acid, they must change how they live and eat to improve their situation. There is no alternative. Another important point here, chlorine, phosphorus, and sulfur, although acidic, are also essential nutrients in human biochemistry, meaning the body must have them. So we shouldn't oversupply, we shouldn't go crazy with alkaline elements. We need a balance. We need to supply our individual biological demand. And that, of course, is the CHI prime directive. Supply your biological demand. We need to supply our own body, emotions aside, with what it needs biologically. And this depends on what state we're in, our fitness and work commitments, our age, our present state of health, and our dietary history. The actual state you and I are in right now reflects how we've been living for the last decade or two or three, and you can't change that overnight. It's always going to take some time, and here's where the element of patience comes in. Finally, pH also plays an enormous role in electrolyte chemistry, which ultimately plays a huge role in cellular hydration and the capacity to sustain cells with water during workouts. You lose water, you suffer with fatigue. A lot of people are walking around that are not working out, they're not athletes, they're complaining about fatigue, they're tired. Check your water intake. It's almost always down by up to 50 to 75%. So bring it back up for you out there with those headaches. It's almost always a function of a lack of filtered clean water. Electrolytes in the body in solution act as conductors of electrical energy. This energy flow is crucial to all athletic potential. And that, my friends, is just the way it is. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from American director, producer, and screenwriter Steven Spielberg. The delicate balance of mentoring someone is not creating them in your own image, but giving them the opportunity to create themselves.